Welcome to Syracuse Speaks from 88.3 WAER. I'm Katie Zolkowski.
And I'm WAER News Director Chris Bolt. The 2020 primary in New York this year fell in the midst of a global pandemic and reckoning on police brutality in America. Both impacted our most recent election, but how will they affect voting in the future? Coming up on Syracuse Speaks, elections have often missed one group of potential voters, youth. Now, energized by activism over racial issues, what are young people doing for change? Also, how are voter registration efforts working around public health restrictions to get more people to exercise their right to vote? Those stories are coming up.
One of the big changes for primaries locally and across the country is the prevalence of mail-in voting. Now, in New York, we didn't have direct mail-in ballots, but all voters were sent an absentee ballot application. And this had a big impact on voter turnout and the rate that we received results. I talked with Onondaga County Board of Elections Commissioner Dustin Zarni about the effects of receiving so many mail-in ballots.
It's been going amazingly well. Incredible participation on the absentee ballot program. And we expect many more to be returned between now and Election Day when they have to be mailed back. I believe that we will have more absentee ballots in this primary than votes in both the 2018 congressional primary and the 2018 gubernatorial primary, which means that we're going to have an incredible participation in this primary for such a, you know, kind of a, the, with the presidential primaries combined with it, but it, you know, it's over. And really the only race on the ballot is the congressional primary. And in 2018, we had 18,000 or 19,000 votes on that. And we're already at 16,000 absentee votes. And we haven't started, you know, obviously Election Day and early voting is going to add to it. And we're going to get more between now and then. So it's an incredible turnout.
I mean, how has the Board of Elections been handling that? It sounds just like an incredibly larger volume than you guys are typically used to, which is great.
Well, we have a great staff. The staff has been amazing. A lot of overtime, but also, you know, we've embraced technology. We're now getting them out on a daily basis. For a while, we were about a week behind, but now we're caught up. And we're really proud of that. The staff has been incredible. And, you know, and luckily, some of the other things that we normally are doing around this time have ebbed off a little bit. Registration has dropped during the coronavirus epidemic. And we expect that to pick up later this summer. But we were able to pivot and focus on that. But it's been a lot of work.
Now, we don't have direct mail-in voting. You can't just send in a ballot. It's an absentee form. But the concept of voting by mail has been heavily politicized. So you hear a lot about voter fraud and other election security issues. Is there truth behind any of this? Can you put people's minds at ease around voting by mail?
There's absolutely no proof of voter fraud on or any in any significant way on any process that we have, whether it's in person or vote by mail or early voting. In fact, study upon study upon study has shown that that is just not a legitimate concern. While you can see isolated cases, which are easily verifiable and easily prosecutable, you don't see it in a way that can affect an election. Mm-hmm. That being said, we have redundancy upon redundancy built into our system to double check things. You know, and in the states that have done vote by mail exclusively, Utah, Colorado, Washington, Oregon, there's been no issues and they've been doing it for years. You know, much like when we brought early voting in last year, the detractors all brought up voter fraud as an issue, but early voting had happened in 38 other states without this voter fraud, and it happened in New York without this voter fraud as well. So it seems to be more of an unjustifiable fear than a real concern. That being said, we have many processes in place to detect it if it does happen.
On the flip side, we have seen and heard just recent horror stories with primaries in Wisconsin, Georgia, just long, long lines, and sometimes even absentee ballots going missing in some states. Is there a chance that this could happen to us in November? Are there going to be better safeguards put in to combat after seeing what's happened in other states?
Well, I certainly hope the legislature will take the governor's executive order and codify it so we can continue this expanded absentee program in the fall, because we do believe that there could be a second wave of COVID-19 in September, October, just in time for our big November election. So I do hope that that either the governor or the legislature will do that. And we've already seen that they've already allowed email applications for the fall election now, and so they're making it easier for the fall. But that being said, this has been a good dry run for mm-hmm. counties throughout New York, because we have about one third of the population that is eligible to vote in the that is voting in this primary, and primaries have lower turnout. So we're really looking at 1/6 of the turnout that we'll see in November. So we kind of have an idea of what this is going to be like, and we can prepare better over the summer and be ready for it. But I have to stress, we need federal funding. The federal funding that we got through the CARES Act that has covered a lot of our increased cost for this primary is pretty much going to be used up. It's not going to be enough for the November election. We have seen that this process, by paying for postage to voters, doing a mailing to voters, and extra staff on hand to process that, even on a temporary basis, is going to chew up our grant money pretty quickly. And our host counties are dealing with budget issues already. And while we have to spend what we have to spend to ensure an election in New York, that would be a tremendous burden on the counties. So we need the federal government to come through with a second round of CARES Act funding that will, help absorb some of these costs for the November election.
If you've already used that funding, is there sort of like a worst case scenario you guys are thinking about, or how are you preparing otherwise just for that increase in voting?
We have a law that says that if a Board of Elections needs to spend funds to have an election, they have to do it, and the local counties have to pay for it. But the local counties are hurting right now. And, this money's going to come from somewheres. And while I believe in democracy, and I believe an investment in democracy is an investment in government overall, and that's a good thing, we live in a very real world. And so we need, and the state isn't going to be able to come up with this money. It has to come from the federal government.
Yeah, it sounds like you guys are in a little bit of a tricky spot. With the COVID economic impacts locally, I hear you saying that you don't want to hurt the county any more than it already is, but you also don't want to sacrifice the election.
Right, and we won't. We're mandated to, do as much as we can, as reasonably as we can. We will look at embracing technology. We will look at embracing electronic forms of communication that will cut down on postage and that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, we're still going to have to provide services to voters, and we will.
Looking to the future a little bit, how has the pandemic changed the way voting happens, the way people perceive it?
I think in many ways, the pandemic has made us rethink the idea of Election Day being a day and not a longer timeline. In fact, early voting already started that with New York last year, and thank God we got it in place last year for this year, because now we have an elongated voting session that will reduce crowds on Election Day and reduce the risk of pandemic spread. And now we're rethinking how we do absentees in New York. But another thing that we're going to have to rethink is when we're going to have results, because with this many absentees, with a half or maybe even more of our vote going to be absentee, on election night, we won't know who the winner is, and that's okay. And we have to understand that as a public, and the media has to understand that as well, that we may not know a winner till July 7th, because we can't even open absentees until July 2nd. because of the time frame for when they can come in and the cross check that we do across the whole state to make sure people aren't double voting in other counties. Those are important safeguards. So we have until June 30th for absentees to come in, and then we have to compile them. We won't open them until July 2nd with 20,000-30,000 absentees, maybe. We're not going to be done until July 6th or 7th. And I think people have to understand that and respect that and allow the boards of elections to do the work, because it's better to have an accurate count than an immediate account. We have a long way to the general election in November. A few extra days to determine primary winners is important. But in November, we may not know till Thanksgiving. So these are the things that we have to, you know, if a race is really close, we may not know for a little while. So it's something that we have to start thinking about.
How are you trying to get that message out that, hey, election night this year for primaries, it's probably not going to be primary night?
Well, we put it up on our social media feeds. We'll continue to do it. Just about every interview I have, I bring that up, and I'll continue to bring that up. We have to make sure that the public knows. And I think there will be a little bit of a culture shock this primary, and hopefully that will prepare us for the November election.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, and good luck with all the operations.
No problem. You take care.
This is Syracuse Speaks, voting during pandemic and protests. I'm Katie Zolkowski with Chris Bolt.
Recent activism in Syracuse and many other cities around the nation is seeking change in police conduct, use of force and racial policies, as well as broader concerns about racial equality. A number of groups are trying to steer the energy and passion of those engaged in marches and protests to civic engagement that can lead to changes in laws.
Much of that is done by voting in local elections for representatives who have the opportunity to change often long-standing laws. In Albany, at least 9 laws changed regarding police conduct after political changes in the Assembly and Senate. Many of the bills had been proposed in the past, but didn't pass into law.
Voter registration has often been a way to get people engaged with the political process around an issue or to advance the ideas of a particular group. I wanted to find out what the status of voter registration is. On the one hand, advocates have to deal with health restrictions due to the coronavirus. But on the other, the passion and commitment of recent rallies and demonstrations could present an opportunity for change through voting.
One that had this booth going, that's his thing. That's how making change in the neighborhoods. You have to vote. You have to register to vote and follow through and vote. And that's how you make change.
I just want to put this out here. I hear so many people say, it doesn't matter if I vote. If it didn't matter if you voted, they wouldn't be trying to stop you from voting so hard. So what we need to do is we have to continue to ensure that voter rights are protected. We have to continue to ensure that we put the voter rights protections back in place.
But we also need to take part in this initiative to make sure that individuals get to the voting sites. What we're finding in our community is that there's not many voting places for African Americans in the African American community. Those places are being taken away from us, or they are not being made available to individuals.
We did this morning. He was so young and probably 18, but he was had this beam on his face when he got registered. That was a good thing to see.
You can make a difference. That's it, right. And you can. Right. It's hard these days.
We just heard from Helen Hudson on voting rights, Belgrove Church youth pastor Nitch Jones on getting people to polls, and volunteers at a booth during a Black Lives Matter protest helping register people to vote. I also had a chance to talk with Onondaga Votes volunteer Chanel Turnquist about how current health restrictions have impacted their voter registration efforts. She shared with me how she's been emphasizing, right down to the local level, residents exercising their right to vote.
They should find out what their local candidates stand for so they can vote on issues that matter to them on a local and state level. It could be trash removal, or it could be you vote on these offices of these people who are running, from judges, city council. These are the people in your community that can make a difference in your community, and they're representing you. So that's why it's important for them to exercise their right to vote every year, not just every 4 years.
Now, with the coronavirus restrictions looking ahead to November for congressional and a presidential election, where you would assume people's interests are raised anyway, how much are your efforts to register voters hampered now because you can't go door to door, really? There's probably a limited number of events, even though I know there have been registration tables at some Black Lives Matter protests. So how much have you been sort of slowed by the restrictions we're living under now?
Yes, we have slowed down a lot because we're worried about not only the health restrictions, but our health as individuals going out to reach out to the community. But we found alternative ways due to Corona, just backtrack, we've actually had a campaign where we were working at the schools. There were lunches given out to families. We were connecting with the parents that came in without masks, of course. But we would register families or give applications, voter registration applications to families who were coming to get lunch with the schools. Because it's very difficult now because of Corona, it did slow us down, but the protests have been another avenue where we've been able to connect with voters. A lot of people are coming out to the protests, and it's been an opportunity to walk amongst the crowd and register voters there as well. And there's a lot of other organizations with the same goal in mind. So there's been a lot of people going out to these crowds during the protests to register voters, which has been an opportunity in the march that they've been having. And we've been trying to work, connect with those people as well.
Do you have any circumstances where people really had an awakening about how voting for different politicians that can then maybe change policy that then can work on items of the protest, and they've really seen the light a little bit more about the value of their vote?
I can say that I've seen people be more active, engaged in the voting process. I have some young people that I connected with, and they were really, I don't think they live here on a full-time basis. I was able to share with them, you know, even though I think they're in school here or working here, they hadn't registered in Syracuse yet. It was great to know that, you know, you could have a voice here, you can vote here, even though you're not registered now. You can register now and still have an opportunity to vote here. And they seemed inclined to do so. I think people have been very passionate about the protests and the cause for the protests, but we are very much encouraging people to think beyond the protests because people are really emotional and in the moment. We're hoping to connect even more so after, I guess, the 40-day march that they have here in Syracuse daily. They have young people marching. Mm-hmm. We want to continue our focus on voting education and getting people registered and more engaged after the protests.
Yeah, absolutely. I can understand what you're saying. You know, it's not just a one issue. You don't just vote about one issue, but this one certainly has caught people's attention.
It has. And we're hoping that we can really just get people more aware of, you know, the upcoming election. We're just hoping that this enthusiasm lasts beyond the march and the protests.
Now, you've done some work in the past. I just was looking at some past stories. In fact, one that we did with you that tried to examine why people don't vote, looking at some very low, you know, voter participation numbers. Is there a connection between kind of energizing people around getting registered and then they are more excited to go out and vote? The example I could think of was before the first Barack Obama election in 2008, it energized people to get to that vote because it was going to be an historic, or potentially historic, turned out to be a historic election that people actually wanted to be part of. This, in some ways, has a similar feel to that. Is there any way to say, yeah, people actually do then go out and vote because they registered sort of anew, even if they hadn't been politically connected before?
I do believe so, because they're energized, and again, it's like a movement. So, but you have a lot of things going on this year, too. You also have a presidential election. Again, everyone usually votes in the presidential election, right? So, but I do think the protests are energizing people to get more engaged. You know, people that you haven't seen engaged or understanding what's going on, they're thinking about it. You know, I'm hoping we're planting seeds. but they do seem more energized about getting more involved.
Do you feel, or does Onondaga Votes, or even other people you've talked with or worked with, feel this is kind of a moment to really ramp up involvement like other things in history, whether it was the Vietnam War or, as we mentioned, the first potential election of an African-American president?
Yes. Yeah, I listen to a lot of people, and I feel like, not to sound cliche, but this is the third Reconstruction where everyone's motivated and they're feeling like, you know, it's the injustices are not, let's say, just police brutality. You know, it's the economic, it's the education, it's financial. Economic, I mean, is the biggest thing, because a lot of people are being impacted. You know, not just Black people, or people of color, you know, people in general. It's support. I like to say Reverend Barber, I've been listening to him, and he's just hitting it on the nose with the Poor People's Campaign. A lot of people are suffering economically. So I think this is a rude awakening, and I'm so hopeful. I am so hopeful that people are going to go to the polls and say, hey, we need a change. You know, are we our brother's keeper? I'm passionate. I'm one to say, yes, we are our brother's keeper. That's why I'm out here volunteering to help people become aware and advocate for people getting involved, because, you know, if it's me now, it could be you later, you know, and we're seeing that economically. The health crisis is affecting many people. You know, if you have health conditions, I know minorities have health conditions, but then you have seniors, mm-hmm. right? They have a lot of health conditions, and, you know, they're being impacted. So, I mean, even the legislation involving healthcare is having an impact on people. So they're really inspired to go out. And, you know, a lot of people want change, and the time is now. Being part of the movement, just with voting, I'm excited to see, you know, everybody on Onondaga Vote. They're excited to see this energy, because this is what we're trying to share with the community.
Are there things that Onondaga Votes has planned to do between now and November to encourage people to register or to get to communities where you might, you know, find people who aren't registered to vote, and maybe now utilizing the energy that is in the community around change on whatever, health issues, racial issues, economic issues? Are there things you can do, communities you can get to capitalize on that, to register more people?
Well, we are planning to do door knocking as soon as everything clears up mm-hmm. a lot more. New York State's doing great in terms of staying safe. Our numbers are going down in regards to the coronavirus. Mm-hmm. So as soon as the numbers go down and we are more comfortable, you know, hopefully within the next month, we plan to continue our efforts in going out to different communities, different venues, registering voters, and also door knocking, because we're connecting with the people. We want to continue doing that. Yeah, and if there's any venues that you would like us to come to, please let us know. You can reach out to us. We're on Facebook. you know, if you reach out to us, we'll definitely get back to you. And we'd like to share information with young people, especially. Again, I said we're a coalition of people from different organizations. So along with League of Women Voters, we have an interactive forum that we can do with young people. If you have an event with young people, we'd love to engage with them. I've gone out and spoken to the Girl Scouts myself. We're looking for opportunities to reach young people, especially if they're coming of age and can vote in November,
right.
Especially.
Thanks for the work that you do. Civic engagement is a community good, regardless of what political stripes you have or which side you fall on any issue. Civic engagement is really necessary to keep our communities going. So thanks for your efforts on behalf of Onondaga Votes and voter registration.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Chris.
And young people are definitely getting involved, not just by voting, but they're holding rallies for racial justice and delivering meals during the COVID-19 crisis. Coming up, we'll talk to a group of young people in Syracuse who are doing just that. Stay with us. This is Syracuse Speaks on 88.3 WAER.
Until the resources and the focus is on expanding the voter base, putting resources into trying to grab an expanded voter pool, at least on the local level, it's going to continue year after year, cycle after cycle, because we're only going after, with our limited money, those that we know have voted in the past.
Listening to WAER will feed your inquisitive and curious side.
I wonder if there are more people alive right now than have ever been dead.
More people currently alive than have ever died in the history of humanity?
That's the question.
Yes, you'll still hear the news each and every day on WAER, but you'll also hear programs that will challenge the way you think. Listen on 88.3 FM or at WAER.org.
The fact that we require registration and that you have to re-register every place that you live, and if you move around a lot, that's a barrier, right? So again, same-day registration might make it easier for people who move around a lot. And the fact that millennials have started their careers in a job market that is very uneven. Many of them are doing work that is where they don't have traditional workplaces. Workplaces are a place where you pick up political information and where you can make connections. And we know also connections and social connections are really important for people to convince other friends to come out and vote.
Welcome back to Syracuse Speaks. I'm WAER News Director Chris Bolt with Katie Zilkowski. Recent protests over police brutality in Black communities have brought thousands of people to the streets of downtown Syracuse in recent weeks.
One of the groups helping to organize these rallies is Raha Syracuse, a Muslim youth group. Youth have played a big role in past movements as well as this one. So I talked to Raha about their goals for change in the community.
My name is Shiwashwani. I am 24 years old and I graduated from SUNY ESF in 2018. And I am currently working at Catholic Charities of Onondaga County. And I also own a business.
Hi, my name is Anne Marie Wood, and I am 23 years old. I just graduated from Lemoyne College in May 2020.
My name is Saria Rahim. I am going to be a senior next year at Syracuse Academy of Science, and I currently work at the ice cream stand in downtown.
All right, my name is Aya Hajari. I just graduated from James Lidwell High School, and next year I'll be going to Lemoyne College, and I work at Chipotle.
All right. Great. You guys are all set. So I'll start off with just an explainer question. You know, Raha it's a relatively new organization, right? So mm-hmm. How did you guys get the idea? I mean, were you all friends before? What's sort of your origin story?
So I was kind of like, it was in quarantine and like, I personally was feeling just like kind of bored and I like was really itching to do something. And so I knew Saria because we were involved in some like youth Muslim like organizations and like we kind of talked to each other and we knew that we both had the same interests. So I talked to her and I was like, hey, we can like really figure out a way to like really impact the community, especially with like the pandemic and everything. And so we talked and we were like, okay, we need to talk to Shua, because we both knew that she was like pretty involved with like community work, did like a lot of charity and was like very involved in the Muslim community. So we spoke to her, and so that's kind of how Raha was born. We started off with like an iftar event where basically, during Ramadan, which is like the holy month in Islam, where Muslims fast from sunrise to sunset, we decided that we were gonna have a like drive-through for like meals, where we would like pass out like meals to Muslim families who typically would like get their meals from the mosques that were now closed. And through that, that's how we became friends with Anne-Marie, because she was like super helpful for us, and she like kept on like working with us with other events, and that's how like the four of us came together.
You've accomplished a lot. Like you said, you've been doing meal deliveries. You helped organize a rally of thousands of people in front of City Hall. I mean, what's it like being a group of people under 25 doing this kind of work in the community?
I think it's crazy. I think since we started in, I want to say, April. So
End of April.
We were all, or me and Aya, we're still like doing schoolwork. And then she has a full-time job. And then Anne-Marie, you still have classes. So it was a lot to just kind of do all that. But it was really fulfilling. And it was just, it felt really amazing to see the end product, especially when we had our first event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, it's been a beautiful process because we never expected our organization to get so large and well-known in the community. We just wanted to like give back to the community. And from there, our organization really grew and became well known after organizing that rally with thousands of individuals. So it has been an organic process, and it's just been really nice, and it's very humbling, and I'm just so glad to be a part of this.
I mean, you guys are also involved in the community now. Do you have ambitions to be in local government, in national office someday, work in these larger organizations?
So I always say that I dislike politics, but a lot of people, a lot of my friends and family have said that they see me like working in politics and being like a political leader. I really don't want to do that, but we'll see what the future holds. I really don't know. I just like really want to be a part of the community and be like hands down and helping with these like grassroots organizations and other organizations in the community. So, but I will admit my work is political. Like it is, it has to do with politics. So I can't really get away from that area.
I think I definitely will end up being in local or city government, running for either common council or, you know, maybe mayor, who knows. But I definitely see myself continuing to work with the community. I do have dreams of having my own businesses, especially in the West Side area.
Yeah, well, for me, like, I kind of wish, like Shua, like, I personally like politics. And a lot of the work I do does revolve around politics, but I personally don't see myself actually like going into politics, just because I would rather just advocate for human rights and like be involved with the community rather than like holding like some public office or working for the government.
I would agree with that too. For me, I feel like I would rather work with people who have been affected by the politics and try to empower them in some way.
I've seen that you guys included census and voter registration information pamphlets in some of your meal deliveries. Why was that an important thing for you guys? I mean, in the communities that you're delivering to, I mean, do you guys plan to vote in the June 23rd primary and in November?
I mean, I can't vote yet.
I mean, I personally can't vote in the primaries, but I do hopefully plan on voting in November. We just like the community that we were giving these meals out to, and like with the gift delivery, a good chunk of them were like new Americans who like didn't fully understand English, and so it was really important to us, like when Interfaith reached out and gave us like census flyers, having them in Arabic as well, so that way we could like really help them.
Young people have been the source for a lot of change in this country throughout its history. What do you think is special about your generation? I mean, you even see it now. There's so much youth activism.
I mean, as a Black hijabi, I think I really love seeing the support and people coming out and people coming out to the protests, the rallies and speaking up. I really appreciate that. And even like at the rally, it was like very emotional for me to see that many people come out and just support Black Lives Matter because you're saying I matter. So I think that was very emotional for me. And just seeing like on media of people coming out and posting and trying to inform people as well is just really amazing to me.
Yeah, I mean, in my experience, I feel like this generation is just kind of different because there is just so much more diversity. And so people kind of have to like listen and educate themselves. And so like through like all the work that we've been doing, a lot of my friends have like become a lot more educated and like are like a lot more willing to learn. And so I think that's just like just the simple fact that like we kind of like take the time to learn about all these different like minority groups and struggles. I think that alone is a big reason as to why there's so much like youth activism.
Mm-hmm. I personally, I feel like even though our generation has a lot of grit, I guess, and a mindset that we really want things to change, I also feel like I have a lot of inspiration from my grandparents, like during the 60s, who also protested. And I don't know why, but my parents, on the other hand, are less likely to get involved in that way. My mom does protest, but she is usually scared, and she's scared for me, too. And I think that a lot of our parents are scared about what our generation is doing. But I think that that almost gives us more power because we're willing to stand up, and we, in a way, are standing up for our parents who are too scared.
I'm wondering if you guys in Syracuse at the moment, are there any programs that you think are really great that should be expanded, or there are big changes that you would like to see from local leaders on a number of levels, whether it's city, county?
I mean, I think me personally, for a long time, I was advocating for getting more POC, specifically Black teachers, because for a long time, I think until high school, that was like the first time I ever had or seen a Black teacher in the classroom. So I think that's personally crazy. But I mean, that's me personally, though. I think as a group, we always try to strive to find like, hey, this community or this area or something is missing here. We see that there is an issue and we want to solve it. So that's why we align ourselves with BLM. We try to always be in support. And then also we just, of course, have our own personal demands and our own personal agenda. But I think whenever it comes to like seeing an issue or a problem, like we try to make sure that we're solving it and helping the best way we can.
I'm kind of sad, and this isn't just like a problem in Syracuse, but I feel like this is a problem nationally where Muslim communities tend to be very quiet mm-hmm. and they tend to be very reserved, just deal with their own problems, just because there's this like fear of like, if you stand for like one cause, say for example Black Lives Matter, then you'll be painted you're like already painted negatively and like as this kind of like threat to like national security. So if you take a stand for another injustice, then you'll be like there'll be even more like backlash. And so because of that, our communities tend to be very, very quiet, mm-hmm. which is something that I am like I've had a problem with for like a very long time. And like that's a big reason as to why there aren't like you don't hear from the Muslim community that often. Mm-hmm. And so that's like one change that I really want to see is just see like more Muslims come out and like be involved in different like community events.
I mean, that was a big thing that me and you talked about in the beginning before talking mm-hmm. to Shewa. We were kind of like very sick and tired of hearing about all these maybe protests or like mm-hmm. events. And then like, let's say me and Aya go and we're like the only hijabis or identifiably Muslims there.
Yeah.
Which like hurts. Like to me, mm-hmm. it hurts because like when we did the rally, the only hijabis I saw were ones I knew. Mm-hmm. Like literally like the only other hijabi that I saw other than us and then people working with YouthCuse BLM was like people who I considered family. Mm-hmm. Which is like, I just think that hurts.
Yeah. And not only that, but like there are so many issues that like concern our community mm-hmm. that we just don't speak about. Like we're never like you won't see a huge like Muslim following when it's like protesting like ICE or like detention centers When you see like a lot of those like activists end up being like a majority Latino, even though those institutions affect Muslim communities just as much. We'd like to see more Muslims show up and like kind of demand the justice that we collectively deserve, whether it's for Black Muslims or whether it's like surveillance within mosques or just like in any like area where we where a, like a lot of us are affected. We would like to see more Muslims show up.
Yeah, so I definitely agree with Suri, and that's why like I do my work, and doing my work in like the both non-Muslim and Muslim communities, unfortunately I don't see that like support from the Muslim population, and it's so unfortunate and so sad.
So for me, I also kind of have a personal agenda because I've been inspired by my peers, and I feel like for me, because I didn't grow up in a Muslim community, I am a convert, so it just makes sense for me to be around the people who do speak up and speak out, because that's kind of like part of my old identity, and coming into my new identity as a Muslim, I feel like it just makes sense to speak out, because that's kind of why I liked Islam in the first place. So that's my agenda.
I mean, I want to ask, how do you guys plan to sustain your efforts? A movement is not a 2-week period.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of hard work. So do you guys have a sort of long-term goal, some pace you like to set for yourself so you don't feel burnt out? Because that's a very real feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. We've definitely experienced that.
Yeah, we experienced the burnout before.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, we've also discussed about... because we are trying to get police out of schools and trying to get like move policing or the idea of being surveillance out of schools. And we understand like that's not going to get done within a month or like 2 weeks. Like this is going to take time. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to analyze it. We're going to have to see like what money can we kind of use to kind of like take out and put back in and try to figure out like what schools need what, like I think we definitely have been like setting dates now for like certain events. Like, let's say instead of like, because for our first Eid delivery toy drive, we did that in a week, and that was ridiculous. And there was definitely bumps.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And like not treating it as like a race where like we're trying to like do the most stuff than any other like organization. We're like very committed to like doing stuff at our own pace, working on ourselves, not trying to compete with anyone else. And just like doing that's I feel like we can all agree that that's how we can do the most good, is by doing what's within our control and doing it at a pace that we're comfortable with, just to make sure that we aren't like burning ourselves out or just like being super negative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I feel like in terms of like burnout, that's definitely a real thing for activists, and I've definitely felt it before. I think it's good to just take little breaks. To anyone out there that's an activist,
yeah.
My advice is to take breaks and like practice self-care and self-love. Mm-hmm. And as a group, we sort of took like a 1-week break, because mm-hmm. like I know that like if we don't take that break, it's going to only affect us in the long term negatively, and we're not going to be able to come up with like really cool, unique ideas. So that is definitely a real thing. And
yeah, I feel like as activists, we're kind of like... I don't know, a chorus where everybody, like if somebody needs to take a breath, then you can stop and there will still be a song playing. Like nothing ever ends.
I like that.
So beautiful.
That's super nice.
Y'all making me cry.
Yeah.
No, I'm really grateful for meeting you all.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like very grateful, and I appreciate you guys kind of coming to me and us starting as a group, and then having Anne Marie like by our sides. It's just like, it's been such a beautiful journey. And I'm looking forward to what we do in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you guys so much for your time. It was such a good conversation.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
New York State recently held its primary election, and we're still waiting for some of the results. What was learned about voters responding to early voting and the record number of mail-in ballots?
And what problems emerge that have to be solved for a smooth and trustworthy November election? That's coming up on Syracuse Speaks here on 88.3 FM WAER Syracuse.
When you want to know what's going on with a friend, you go to them directly because you want the full picture. It's the same reason you turn to your public radio station for your political news. Every day, reporters at NPR and this station go straight to the sources and ask the questions you need answered. Know what's going on in the country and in your community. 2020 election, it's time to listen.
On 88.3 WAER, your local NPR station from Syracuse University.
If people understood how much is at risk and what they're voting for, I think they would come out more. But it's just being, how do you inform everyone of what's going on and how do they not get bombarded by the propaganda?
Welcome back to Syracuse Speaks, Voting During Pandemic and Protests. I'm Chris Bolt with Katie Zilkowski.
New York's primary election last week was different from any other before it. The majority actually voted through absentee ballots, which anyone could use due to the pandemic. What was learned from the flood of mail-in ballots, health concerns at polling places, and other aspects of voter behavior?
I had a chance to talk with election watchdogs Common Cause, a group that had many poll watchers out last Tuesday. They were looking for any places where voters had trouble, polling places that weren't prepared, or other problems that could interrupt people's right to cast a vote. Onondaga County Elections Commissioner Dustin Zarni also gave me his take on any problems or practices that need to improve so we can all vote in November and trust the outcome.
In short, when we make it easier for people to vote, they tend to. Providing the expanded absentee option in the middle of a pandemic was vital for a successful election night. In this congressional primary, we still saw about 40,000 Democrats in Onondaga County come out and vote. That is, you know, maybe surpassing the numbers of 2016 with Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders going at it. And that is not something anybody would have predicted.
Based on preliminary voter data, we're already seeing that voters took advantage of all three options.
Sarah Goff, Deputy Executive Director of Common Cause New York, thanks for joining us on Syracuse Speaks.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. Early voting, it looks like about 12% of the in-person electorate voted early to take advantage of fewer crowds. There was a tremendous response in terms of absentee ballot requests. So it seems like voters were informed about the choice and two decided to exercise the option. And then on election day, plenty of folks turned out to vote. So we were very pleased to see that voters utilized all three options.
Now, early voting as one of the options did not particularly get utilized to the extent that we might imagine. Is that a strategy that now that New York is doing it could be emphasized more, utilized more, or are there some problems still with early voting given the limited number of polling places?
Particularly this year, there's obviously a very real hesitance to go out into the world with, you know, a room full of strangers, and every person has to assess what level of risk they want to take. That obviously also applies to voting. So, you know, this is now our second cycle with early voting in New York. As we've seen in other states, it takes years for voters to build the muscle of voting early. It's still such a new thing for New York. I think for a lot of voters, many probably didn't even know they had the option. And even if they did, to your point, because of the public health crisis, there's certainly a hesitancy to go outdoors and vote in person. So we hope to see more of this in November because we want to continue to give people options more than anything. And if the thought of going to your poll site on election day, which more than likely will be crowded, you now have other days to vote.
Yeah, I do think that the more ubiquitous use of absentees hurt early voting this time around, whether that would be the case in November. And also, what we did see with early voting this time is less frequent voters, less low propensity voters that used early voting because they didn't plan ahead and do the absentee. We saw that with Election Day voting as well. So in a general election, you're going to have a lot more of those types of voters, not as dedicated voters, not voters who are going to make up their mind 2 weeks, a month ahead of time, but people who are going to make up their minds that day to go vote. So I don't necessarily think that you can draw a lot of conclusions from the use during the primary. I think we'll have to just see what this November election brings and what kind of environment we're voting in.
Do you come away today or even in the next week or two with things that you want to look at or things that you want to say, okay, here's an election that had pretty good participation. Before November, I need to change what?
Using this primary, helped us develop a system that allowed us to, in a sense, become a mail house, more than a board of election. We had so many ballots that we had to send out, over 32,000 ballots in a one-month period of time. If we're doing this on a scale of six or seven times, that we might do in a general election, we're going to have to do that over a longer period. So start, making plans in June, July to have all the supplies ready to go and also, the funding for it as well. But we also have to, tighten up our internal processes so we can get things out on a quick manner and not get bogged down and still be able to do all the other election work that we have to do.
Does Common Cause have concerns or suggestions about, making sure people's voting ability is as good as it can be, or worries about disenfranchisement, whether it had to be something that evidenced itself at the primary or not?
We're really hoping to see a continuation of these three ways to vote. So currently, this expanded absentee that we have in place for the June primary is only for the June primary. So it is our hope that the state legislature and the governor pick this up before the November election cycle and pass legislation to make this permanent for the November cycle so boards can act now. How do we increase voter comfort with absentee voting? And we think a big piece of that is introducing tracking technology for your ballot. So like you would receive a FedEx package, you know when it leaves the Board of Elections, you know when it's supposed to arrive at your house, and then you can track its process back to the Board of Elections.
Right, to make people more comfortable or have more trust in that process, given that we're just used to going to the polling places, and there's even concerns about that, about how ballots are counted or when there are recounts, et cetera. Is there also a resource issue that really needs to be talked about more in terms of people, in terms of money to send out all of the absentee ballot requests, if that's the way that we go?
So obviously, I'm not telling you anything your listeners don't know. In the middle of a budgetary, statewide, and local fiscal crisis, and because of the way we fund our elections, which is mostly through local money, county-level money, elections have been chronically underfunded for decades. And so we hope to see, even in the time of a fiscal crisis, that the state will step up and support our democracy by providing local boards with the funds they need to execute on this in the 21st century in a way that the technology exists. It's a barcode. We do it with our FedEx packages all the time. But it's small things like that that increase trust and transparency to the process that will make people feel more confident that their vote is counted.
So, Dustin Czarny, before November, when would you need to know in advance so that you could have the people available, the resources available to not only send out all of those, but get them all back, get all the absentee or mail-in ballots back, warehouse them until you can count them, then what could be a much more lengthy process of counting them?
What date is tomorrow? That's the day. Every day that we waste going into this is a day that the voters don't know what's going on, and we as elected officials don't have time to plan for. Because, of the ever-evolving crisis, we didn't even know until March that we were canceling the April election. We didn't know until May that we were expanding the absentees for the June election. But we have a lot of data now. we have a lot. We know how this worked and what we can do to improve it. And the best thing we can do to improve it is to make decisions this month, next month.
All right. Well, Dustin Czarny, Elections Commissioner for Onondaga County, thanks for joining us on Syracuse Speaks.
Thank you, Chris.
And then finally, Sarah Goff, what's at stake? I mean, both in how the election is carried out so that we can make sure it's as trustworthy as possible, but also in the outcome of this election, which, needless to say, already is getting a ton of attention.
So, like we have been pushing all along, we think that this expanded access to the ballot through early voting, enhanced absentee, and then in-person election day voting, the three measures in place will help drive people to the polls however they want to vote, and then ensure that, you know, we are deliberate in the ballot counting process like we're seeing for the primary. A lot of absentee votes are still going, still being sent to the boards of elections and they're receiving them. And so we just want everyone to remember to be patient, give the boards time to count the ballot because it's more important to get it right than to quickly rush the process.
All right. Well, Sarah Goff, Deputy Director of Common Cause New York, thank you for joining us. Appreciate your comments for Syracuse Speaks.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me.
There's still a lot of time before the November election, and plenty can change in the months ahead. New York is seeing a steady decline in new COVID-19 cases, and the city of Syracuse recently released a list of police reforms they're trying to implement. But the coronavirus and recent protests are sure to still have an effect on the general election, as they have the primary.
If you want to hear this program again, or listen to any of our past Syracuse Speaks episodes, you can visit our website, waer.org. Syracuse Speaks is a production of WAER, Syracuse Public Media. Our executive producers are Joe Lee and Kevin Kloss. For WAER's Katie Zilkowski, I'm Chris Bolt. This is WAER Syracuse.